Chapter 31. Many, many lives later, I sat down opposite Virginia in the lounge of the Cronus Club and said, "His name is Vincent." "Darling, that's hardly much to go by." "He's one of us, a Roboran." I asked him about the Cronus Club and he attacked me and walked away.
"How immature of him."
"He has ambitions." Virginia was more than capable of being uninterested when she wanted to be. She wanted to be now. She stared at the ceiling as if it was the most fascinating thing in the world, and waited for the rest. "The message keeps coming down to us from the future generations. The world is ending. The world is ending. Nothing changes about the established course of linear events. Nothing. Except us."
"You suggest this Vincent may be the who which leads to the what?"
No, I don't know. I'm suggesting that one of his character, someone who is one of us but not one of us, is someone seeking an answer, mindless of the consequences. That's what I suggest."
"And Harry," she murmured, "you appear to have an idea of what you desire to do next."
"We look for anomalies," I explained firmly. "The Cronus Club looks for events which should not be happening in their time periods, changes to the normal course of things. I think I've found one."
"Where?"
"Russia." She sucked in her teeth thoughtfully.
"Have you spoken to the club? To Moscow? St. Petersburg? Leningrad, I suppose we must call it. Ghastly, though it is."
"I sent them a message via Helsinki. I'm going to Finland tomorrow morning."
"If you're already pursuing this, why do you tell me?"
I hesitated. Then, "Should something unfortunate happen, I'd ask that you pass my suspicions on to others.
But you're concerned that if one of our kind is altering established events, they may have informants within the club?"
She sighed. I wondered how long she'd held on to this thought, and how many of our peers considered it too. Were we, all of us, so used to apathy and deceit that not one had bothered to raise the question of it? Did we all take betrayal so much for granted? Then what good could be achieved other than to spread suspicion without a cure?
"But," she went on, brightening a little, "you, dear boy, clearly trust me enough to inform me of your concerns. But not Moscow or St. Petersburg. Oh, Harry, your time as an intelligence agent has done nothing for your socialite reputation."
"I wasn't aware I had a socialite reputation."
"Quite, Harry."
A note of what I imagined passed for genuine concern slipped into her voice.
"I understand how exciting it must be to be informed that the world is ending. What a marvellous adventure this must present for you. Repetition is dull. Stimulation is vital to stave off the decline of faculties and will. But the simple mathematical truth is that between us and the events unfolding of the future, there is an almost infinite range of possibilities and permutations. And to think that we can in any meaningful way affect this now is not merely ludicrous, it's really rather childish. I have no objection to you doing whatever it is you wish to do, Harry. It is, after all, your life, and I know that you won't cause any especial embarrassment for the club while doing it, but I just don't want to see you get too emotionally involved."
I considered Virginia's words. She was, physically, older than me, but after a few deaths, such things rarely counted. It was more than likely that she'd been through more lives than me, but again, after the first few centuries, most Kalachakra reached a plateau where time hardly mattered and the soul barely changed. Yet Virginia had always been a figure of seniority to me, the woman who had saved me from Fearson, introduced me to the club. For her, these memories would fade, and with the passing of experience, perhaps our relationship would change. But for me, the recollection was as strong as ever. I remembered Krista standing by my bedside in Berlin. In 1924, I had travelled to Liverpool to perform a similar service. The man dying had gone by the name of Joseph Kirkbriar Shotbolt, born 1851, dies on average 1917 to 27. Statistically, Spanish flu was his most common killer, along with three members of his near family, 12 cousins and roughly a quarter of the waterside community where he sometimes retired.
"Can't shake the bugger," I'd heard him exclaim on those few occasions he'd outlived it. "Damn plague just follows me anywhere."
This time, he'd missed Spanish flu by the rather sensible precaution of spending the last years of the war on an island in Micronesia, which hadn't yet been marked on the atlas, but whose name in the tongue of its native people translated as Teardrop Blessing. The rather less fortunate outcome of his escaping the flu was the acquisition of a parasite which caused his feet to swell to quite appalling size, bursting out of his socks in their disfigured redness, and which, more crucially, created a series of cysts on his kidneys and liver, which induced the septicemia from which he was dying when I finally met him. A Kalachakra tends to recognise another when he sees him, not necessarily through any instinct, as my relationship with Vincent was to testify, but through the incongruity of circumstance at a certain bearing. A 6-year-old boy, visiting the bedside of a man dying in a whitewashed infirmary in Liverpool from a parasitical infection that the doctors were at a loss to cure, tends to induce a certain circumstantial recognition that needs no greater introduction. Once a giant of a man, the onset of death had wrinkled Shotbolt up like a burned chip. Every joint seemed bent a little beyond comfort, the tendons seizing up, and the heavy pain medication he was on had only accelerated the liver failure, which was turning his skin a very noticeable and rather pungent yellow. His hair had fallen out, including eyebrows and eyelashes, and as he lay alone, dying his last, the swollen knuckles on his hand stood out bulbously above the bedsheets where he clutched them to him against a deep-seated ache that no doctor could cure. I had met Shotbolt only a few times before, though he did not remember me, but recognition of what I was there immediately.
"From the club, are you?" he grumbled,
his voice surprisingly heavy for a man so close to the end.
"Tell 'em if it's a cure. I don't bloody want it. Lord, and I'm thanking you kindly. That'll be what I need."
I flicked through the chart at the end of his bed. The drips fed into his body were mostly saline, a half-hearted attempt at liquid sustenance after his digestive system had packed up. The bottles were glass drums, heavy, a leak in one where the rubber had cracked round the nipple of the jar.
"Oh, God," he groaned, seeing me read. "You've trained as a doctor, haven't you? Can't stand bloody doctors, especially when they're 5 years old."
"Six," I corrected. "And don't worry, you'll be dead within a week."
"A week? I can't be sitting around here for a bloody week. You know those bastards won't even give me something good to read. Mustn't get excited, Mr. Shotbolt, they say. Now, Mr. Shotbolt, can you make it to the potty?" "The potty? Do you know that's what they actually call it? I've never been so humiliated in all my life."
The way he spoke implied that here was a man for whom once-in-a-lifetime outrages had been a fairly common occurrence in times past, and would probably be again. I chose not to debate the point, and satisfied that for all his medication, Shotbolt still had some semblance of coherence, I sat down on the edge of his bed and said, "I've got a message."
"It had better not be a question about Queen Bloody Victoria," he growled. "Can't stand all these academics wanting to know about her stocking size."
"It's not a question," I repeated patiently. "More of a warning. It's been passed down from generation to generation, trickled down from the future."
"What have we done this time?" he grunted. "Too much ice and not enough fire."
"Something like that. Apparently, and I feel a little embarrassed telling you this, but apparently the world is ending, which is, in and of itself, no great surprise. But the end of the world is getting faster, and that's something of a stumper."
Shotbolt considered this a while, fingers still tight around the edge of his sheets. Then, "At last," he exclaimed, "something new to talk about."
Almost exactly 30 years later, I boarded a flight from Heathrow Airport to Berlin-Tempelhof, changing passports on my way through customs, heading east in search of something new.